Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. My name is Joe Screbbles. I am joined by Rory Powers.
Hi, hello.
And special guest, Daniel Robson from IGN Japan.
Hello.
IGN Hi. Rising Sun, as we Goodness shouldn't me. Call it.
Yeah, please don't.
Yes, let's not do that. Daniel's joined us for the week, and it's been very nice having someone sitting next to me for once, because I'm on a bank of empty desks.
I usually
in like the dunce corner.
Joe away by himself.
How am I in the dunce corner? I'm in the dunce sandwich. I'm between two banks of happy people.
Dunces, yeah. Two rows of dunces.
You're the bread to my dunce. But yeah, Daniel's been joining me in dunce sandwich.
Bread to my dunce?
Yeah. Why not?
Is that an English expression that I've...
Yeah, man, it's all the rage. So you've been gone too long, man. You don't know anything about dunce sandwiches.
I do like that idea. If we say anything really stupid during the podcast, we'd be like, oh, it's a UK thing.
Oh, yeah, everyone's just over here. That's what happens now.
You don't know the dunce sandwich? Anymore, yeah.
But, yeah, Daniel, basically, we just sort of want to talk about what Japan's like because we're jealous of you. Tell us all about your job and what IGN Japan is.
Okay, so we launched IGN Japan. Oh, sorry, I should turn my phone off. It buzzed.
Unbelievable. No, send it back.
I'm so rude.
send
it back.
Please.
We launched in April last year in sort of beta, but officially like in September. So IGN Japan's only been going for about like 6 months, technically. But it's a Japanese language version of IGN. So we cover games mainly and starting to beef up our movie and TV and all that kind of coverage. Mm. We try to keep up with you guys in terms of video, which is not easy because IGN produces so much
well-oiled
great video.
Look at his spewing. Look at the smile on Power's face. Unbelievable.
It's funny because I'm a huge Japan nerd, so I actually follow the IGN Japan Twitter.
Oh, cool.
Don't understand what any of it is, but I really enjoy the pictures.
The pictures are great.
Actually, I should tell you, it's all really interesting.
So. Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
My favorite thing was seeing one of my articles translated into Japanese, including the stupid bylines that I write at the bottom of
all of them.
And just like getting my friend who speaks Japanese to translate it back and being like, yeah, the joke's actually funnier in Japanese. It's like, oh, sweet.
Yeah, they actually really want you to move over, Joe. Turns out you're like 20% funnier in Japanese.
I'll take that. I'd absolutely take that.
Good.
But yeah, so, I mean, what's the day-to-day for you guys then? So you're kind of a smaller operation than major IGN, but then is it about the same size as our office?
So basically, for one thing, so we're operated by a big newspaper company's digital wing in Japan, right? So we have the company itself is pretty big. It's actually like Japan's biggest online like newspaper sites and stuff like that they run. But
awesome. This
is the first time doing something like games and sort of youth-oriented coverage.
Okay.
Or entertainment, and we cover sort of about 40% of what we publish is translated from the IGN US, UK, Australia, like main sites, into Japanese. And the other 60% we make original in our office. So we have a proper editorial team. We make text-based stuff. We make video stuff. So, you know, we're still small, but we're doing our best.
Magazine, like games magazines are still a huge deal in Japan, as far as I understand, or is that perhaps been missold to me?
You understand wrong, Joe.
Have I been understanding wrong? Certainly lots of the stuff we get told comes from Japanese magazine scoops, or is that just
sure
how it happens?
It's a whole load of stuff that goes on around that, but I mean, I'd say that print magazines are definitely dwindling in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably maybe healthier circulations than they are in Britain, but then again, there's more people, like there's 130 million people. So they're kind of hanging in, but I mean, obviously the websites are bigger.
So what you're saying is you're going to smash them.
Print
is dead. You're going to destroy that
industry.
You heard
it here, folks, on IGN. Print is dead.
My favorite thing that you've told me about the day-to-day workings of your office this week was that there's a horse racing tips site that and that they do a video, a weekly video, where a woman in a bikini comes in and sort of rides about on the floor and doesn't really talk about horses very much, But the strangest thing about this is that she always wears a mask.
Yeah. Wait, a horse mask?
Or no, that? Like... Well, she changes masks, but the scariest one is just this woman in this bikini wearing a hockey mask like Jason. Just like, sort of, I don't know, just rolling around a bit.
Hypothetically speaking, what would one put into YouTube to find said video?
I don't want to sort of piss off the guys on the horse racing site that we have, but
it's an amazing looking thing. Yeah,
it's certainly different than the video we make at IGN Japan.
Yeah. Mm. That was good fun.
A fun video that we did last week was, you know, on 1-2 Switch, on the Nintendo Switch, there's the baby game where you have to put the baby to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we got some of the mums and dads around the office all together to see who was the best at putting the baby to sleep in the baby game. And so we did like a, I don't know, baby sleep off.
Right? Did you get people just getting furious that they thought they were really good and it turns out
that was me? The problem is, right, I have a kid and she's nearly 5, and so it's been a long time since I've actually had to rock a baby to sleep.
You know what I mean?
So I was out of practice, but one of my colleagues, you know, she's had an even longer gap, so she had no excuse to do better than I did. But one of our guys, he's just recently had twins, and so he's very, very adept. And so we actually I gave him a second Switch, so he had to do two at once. And he pulled it off, man, and he got like the best score out of any of us.
Fair play
on two Switches simultaneously.
Does IGN Japan have like a particularly different? So, because like IGN has games that work and games that don't work. Like, some things just the audience aren't into as much. Like, we don't have a huge strategy crowd, for instance. Like, do you see like particular trends that we just don't have over here?
Mm. Like, yeah, of course.
What are your bigger things? Like, what are you writing about that we're not?
So, some of the stuff that's probably similar is obviously things like Metal Gear, Dark Souls, Zelda. Like, big Japanese franchises do really well for us, but also, you know, we have things like Shadowverse, which actually IGN's been covering quite well in English too, but...
I have missed
it's,
that.
It's what like is Shadowverse? That sounds like a realm that might exist, not a video game.
What? Are you revealing some of your weird supernatural beliefs?
Yeah, of course, yeah. You know the Shadowverse.
I see it every time I close my eyes. Yeah.
Isn't that in Zone 6 somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah, between Perivale and Thaden Boys or whatever. Although, you know the bits at the end of the tube map? You're like, those aren't real. Veil.
Yeah. Cockfosters. Someone's having a laugh.
I've been there. It's not as funny as it sounds.
Oh, really?
It's a dangerous place.
It's not as sexy as it sounds, is it?
No, it's not. Well,
to be fair, you
depends
think,
what you're into. Yeah.
You think a place called Cockfosters is pretty dangerous.
Well, if you like Cox and if you like Fosters, you know, it's a good time.
I never thought about the Fosters aspect. Yeah. They should really do some advertising around that. Anyway.
The Shadowverse is kind of like a Hearthstone type card game.
Oh, right. Yeah. Is it iOS based or is it PC? Or?
It's iOS and Android. Yeah. But it's huge in Japan. Everybody plays that. So that performs like madly well for us. We have obviously like RPG games do really well. Visual novel type games do really well.
Oh, yeah. That's cool because you said like 60% of editorial content is generated by you. So then that kind of allows for that 60% to be filled by what's culturally relative to the Japanese audience.
Yeah. A lot of it is like, I mean, for example, we're never going to be able to like localize mobile game stories from IGN or games that are only out in Japan or that kind of thing. So those are obviously like one focus. Yeah.
Is like anime a big part of it as well?
We cover a little bit of anime, but because we just launched and we'd be spreading ourselves a bit thin to try to cover all that.
It's good to focus.
But eventually we'll cover more. But yeah, we cover bits and bobs of anime. Like, what was that film? Your Name was the English title?
Yes, Your Name.
And In This Corner of the World. That's not out here yet, right?
Don't think so.
I haven't heard of that one.
No.
But I saw Your Name and it was amazing. Mind-blowing.
Actually, Ghost in the Shell was an interesting one for us because obviously it's a Western take on a Japanese IP.
Was there like kickback or were people pretty excited about
it?
Like,
people were generally quite just really curious because it wasn't like...
What
I noticed, you know, in the West, there was the whole kind of all the whitewashing and all of those arguments and stuff. People didn't really care that much about that in Japan, I guess.
I suppose
everyone was just like, oh my God, Scarlett Johansson's in it?
I forget which site it was, but they did an interview interviewing people in the streets out in Japan about like the controversy of her being cast. Mm. And it was just very much like, I'm excited.
That's
like,
awesome.
She's a good actor. I hope she does a good job. Like, it was much more just fine.
Shame she didn't.
She did an okay job. It was an okay movie.
I still haven't seen it. I just wanted to bait you.
You just want to poke the bear.
No, stop calling yourself the bear. We're not using that nickname.
I have to. I've just made a jacket. I got a pair of Letterman. Yeah, I think like that one would be interesting. Like I'd love to see if they kind of engage, if your audience engages with the Death Note Netflix series that's coming out as well. Right. Like that'll be really interesting as well.
These are all just words to me.
Really? Oh, no, you should watch Death Note. You would love Death Note.
Isn't someone really famous in Death Note? Like Morgan Freeman or something?
No, it's, what's his name? It's, oh God. He plays a Shinigami, which is like a god of death. It's who he was the Green Goblin in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man
Willem
movie.
Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe. Oh, Willem.
I'll watch anything with Willem Dafoe in.
He looks like a god of death. His
he
face.
He looks like just... anything evil you want him to be.
He's the evil he's in a human body.
Man.
Could you imagine if he was like your uncle or something?
Oh, man.
And at Christmas uncle and stuff, Willem. He's like, happy birthday. He's petrified.
And every single present is a jack in the box. Every with, time I open it, just
with his face on it.
I read a tweet, oh God, I think it was maybe by Mr. Biffo or someone like that, but it was like, you know, the last thing you want to see before you go to bed at night is Willem Dafoe grinning at the end of your bed or something like that. He's a wonderful actor, but he is a very unusual face.
Special, unusual face.
You just wonder, like, when he was a child, like, was he born just with that, like, just the grin? Like, his parents are like, we birthed a villain.
You know what? Like, he's going to take over the world. I've never thought about what he must have looked like as a kid, because... Yeah. He looks like some sort of haunted doll.
If someone has the time to Photoshop Defoe's face onto a baby's face, a baby's body, that would be great.
Did you ever play Thumper?
Yeah.
Like, is that really
the racing
aggressive rhythm action game that I got obsessed with for a little bit? And it's on PSVR, which is amazing. But at the end of every stage, this giant screaming, like... I think they call it an insane space head from the future, rises up from the horizon.
Yeah, it does look a bit like Willem Dafoe.
It looks like Willem Dafoe. Like, I mocked up a film poster of Thumper the movie with Willem Dafoe's screaming head in the background.
Spider-Man! That would be amazing.
It was really good.
I should say I really like Willem Dafoe.
I love him.
Oh, we all love him. I don't think we're saying anything against him. He just is evil.
He knows he's got that face. Come on.
He plays it well.
He plays his own face well.
I think we all play our own faces quite well.
Speaking of someone who plays well, this is the worst segue I could have done.
No, I like it.
It's okay. We had Overwatch's Jeff from the Overwatch team, Kaplan, in the office this week, mm-hmm. which... If you've listened to this podcast, well, firstly, the whole reason, because the whole reason he came into the office in the first place was basically because I was drunk enough at one point to corner a PR when I found out that Jeff Kaplan was going to be in the UK. I said, look, we do this podcast, right? And there's this running joke that we talk about Overwatch so much that people told us to stop talking about Overwatch. So the ultimate fuck you to our listeners would be to have an entire podcast where Jeff Kaplan's on it. And so there is now. So next week we're going to have our podcast with Jeff Kaplan. Mm-hmm. But we haven't been able to put up any of our videos and things yet. So I thought this would be a nice chance to talk about having the nicest and... genuinely one of the smartest men I've ever met in games.
He was very game for all the things that you put him through, I must say.
It's nuts. Like, because we were really worried. He's a very mild-mannered man, but he's clearly very intelligent. And we'd heard these sort of rumors that if you've ever watched a Jeff Kaplan developer update for Overwatch, he does them in one take, apparently. That's the word. Like, he just sits there for 10 minutes and says everything in a perfect order, in a completely legible way. And it's kind of amazing. And it's become...
Is he an omnic?
I think he is. It's become a meme at this point that he's so good at it that you can cut his videos together and make him say funny things. There's a YouTuber that he references a lot called Dino Flask, who just, his whole career essentially is built on just making Jeff Kaplan say mean things about his own community and game, and has turned him into like this strange meme. But so we got him in and we were kind of like, to tee up a few of the things we did, we got him to like give facts about every single hero in the game. We made him read mean comments from IGN. That one's going to be really good.
Yeah.
And we were like, we know he'll be able to talk about these things really well. Is he going to enjoy us like making him do non sort of advertising-y, you know, like not essentially being nice about his game in some ways? He was amazing.
He was so good.
He's so funny. And like,
it was really funny as well because we've had a lot of people into this office before. Like we've had like everyone from like you know, video game developers to big up movie stars like Vin Diesel that come in with 20 different people, you know, catering to their every needs. And I think it was our editor-in-chief Alex was saying, I've never seen the team more nervous than when Jeff Kaplan was coming in. Like, because we had a whole morning to prep, which was get the studio ready, get the show times and lineups all printed off so everyone knew what they was doing. Mm. I had like butterflies in my stomach. I couldn't believe we were actually going to meet him. This was so, like, I think monumental for so many of us.
Yeah.
To meet the guy who's built the game that we've played every single day since it was released.
For almost a year at this point.
And, you know, it's kind of worrying because you always hear, like, don't meet your heroes. It couldn't have gone better. Yeah. He couldn't have been nicer. It was amazing.
It is weird, like, kind of going... It's weird being so happy to meet just, like, a guy who's made a thing you like.
Yeah.
But I was... just delighted all day. Like, one of the best days of my working life, just sitting around with Jeff Kaplan having a chat. And like you were saying the other day, you sort of didn't want to come across as a nerdy fan. You don't want to be the guy that's like, oh, let's talk about your game, because he's here for 2 hours. He doesn't want to just sit there like being badgered by fans.
Yeah, because you want to be quite professional when people come into the office.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, okay, I'm gonna kind of be a bit reserved and not just bombard him with my love of Overwatch. But then at one point in between shooting segments, I was setting up and he just turned to me and he was like, so who do you play? Who are your mains? Like, what characters do you enjoy? And I just completely froze up and I was like, I'm like a soldier, just like losing my mind about how just interested he was in not only our experience of the game, but like ways in which we were playing it. For one of the videos that we made, we got him to kind of review esports style, almost do like a shoutcast commentary over one of the games that we had played that morning.
Let's not talk about that one.
We had some highs and lows, but the whole selling point was that we didn't tell him who was playing which character.
So that he could be as mean as
he
wanted to be.
So he could be as mean as he wanted to be.
And it was the first thing we got him to do, so he hadn't met anyone really. So he didn't have like any connection to people in the room. He couldn't gauge it at all.
So he took the piss out of Joe.
Hated how I played Orisa.
He ripped Joe apart. Aww. It was so funny.
It was horrible.
And then, so then, like, he's doing this for like a good 10 minutes. And then, of course, the video ends. And we're all like, that was great. That was really, really great. And then Kaplan's like, who was Orisa? And Joe's like, that was me. Just really this ashamed little hand rises from the crowd.
She just knew.
It was so funny. But he complimented my D.Va playing.
Mm. Which, yeah, your Switch was very good.
Almost just melted me on the spot into a little fanboy puddle.
That's going to be such a good video.
It's gonna be
watch
great.
Anything with Jeff Kaplan in it. I don't care if it's ours or not. He's just the nicest man.
And
we
went through every single hero in Overwatch and got him to off the cuff tell him an unknown fact that we hadn't heard.
That was
yet.
Amazing that he just was able to just pull
unscripted.
One out for every
there
single
was
character.
One part where he stumbled. There was one character, like, and this is like 17 characters in. He was like, just thinking about something I could come up with. And I was like, we've hit a point of, you know, he's run out of things to say. And then he suddenly goes, oh yeah, and just reels off for like 5 minutes really interesting early facts about Symmetra, I think it
really
was.
Really interesting like, stuff, yeah.
Like, if you're as nerdy about the game as we are as well, like some of the stuff he goes into, firstly, like confirms a load of long-held beliefs I've had about early concept art and stuff. Like, we've really looked long and hard at like, the original concept art that they made that he showed at DICE earlier this year during his keynote. And we're kind of like, oh, I think that's them and that makes sense if that person's that one. And he said a load of things and I was just sitting there going, yeah, we were right with the first.
I'll say one, I don't want to give too many away, but I'll say one that I thought was really cool and interesting was during the early stages of the game when they were playing through as different characters. Obviously, like at that point, all the graphics aren't done to completion. There's models put in place to kind of emulate what will be a finished product. So Hanzo's ult, when it fired across the map, instead of being the huge dragon, it was just a line of orbs that would kind of pass through the map.
To show like the area of effect.
To show
like
the area of effect.
Basically.
Exactly, yeah. But because they played so often with that version of the game running, Kaplan and his team at the time would call that the caterpillar. So anytime Hanzo ulted, they would all be on the mics being like, caterpillar, caterpillar. Yeah. They could tell that the caterpillar's coming down the mic.
He was saying at the end, he called himself a digital digital pack rat, and apparently he's got, like, somewhere in a folder, he's got all of these early things chronicled, and apparently he's got this one clip of him getting a team kill with the caterpillar.
Yeah.
I want to see that so awesome. Much. It's so cool.
And then most importantly, at the end of it, after everything was done, we gifted him with a magnet that Dale had made of the boy spray from Overwatch, which we found out was called Timmy.
Yeah,
his name's Timmy.
He's called Timmy.
We gave it to him, and he was just overjoyed.
We gave him a Game of the Year trophy for Overwatch and a fridge magnet of spray from his game, and he was definitely more excited for the fridge magnet.
It was absolutely brilliant.
So good.
Yeah, it was great.
But this is a good excuse to also talk about the upcoming Overwatch update, which we found out the day before he came in, and we had no questions for, because we were just like, oh my god, we were told he had nothing to announce.
That's just what he wants you to think.
That's
though,
exactly
Kaplan.
It.
He's sneaky.
So it's coming out on April 11th. We thought it was April 12th, but that's because it was put out by the Australian Twitter feed originally. So it's April 11th.
Oh, April 11th. Oh
next.
My god, that's so soon.
Tuesday?
Is that because the Australian Twitter feed always just gets the dates wrong? Or is it the time zone thing?
Either or. Who knows? Both. Yeah, it could be both. they probably thought it was the right time zone. And it looks like what it's going to be. I've been looking at everyone's stuff with him, and I reckon I've pieced it all together. I've sorted it out. It's going to be...
Is that with the cork board in the office?
Yeah, with all the strings.
You've got the yarn string.
We were talking about string boards last week.
Yeah, we finally
got
one.
We really like that. I'm almost positive it's going to be a PvE, Junkenstein's Revenge-style mode featuring Mercy, Torbjorn, Tracer, and Reinhardt.
Not Soldier?
No Soldier. In 7 years before the game is currently set, when the Omnix were going crazy in King's Row in London.
So you got to...
I'm putting myself out on the line. That's exactly what it's going to be. And it's called King's Row Uprising. Because they released a comic yesterday, which I've read through, and that's essentially the precursor to them going to London to fight the uprising. And it's when Tracer's just joined Overwatch for the first time as an active member.
See, that
four characters
would work really well in terms of PvE as well, because then you have a bunch of characters, a bunch of robots you can fight against in a PvE structure. Mm-hmm. It's also relative to the narrative as well.
Yes.
It's not like Junkenstein's Revenge where it was like, were they kind of zombie robots?
Or it didn't really. It was sort of just set apart from the narrative. But apparently, I saw him speaking to, I think it was PC Games N, and the biggest thing they've had as a response is like, we really like all these events you do, but all of them are just like Christmas or like random sort of jokes. Like mm-hmm. None of them are set in the world you've made, and everyone wants to know more about that. So this is the first time they've made an in-universe event for the game.
You know, sort of so cool.
I guess in the way that World of Warcraft does, you know, like a thing happens in the world and then you go and deal with that as a team.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. Like if you give a shit about the lore, finally they're giving you some lore in the game instead of just in comics and, you know,
which
surrounding
is what,
wiki stuff. Like,
which is what everyone wants.
Like, yeah.
Story modes. I actually would love more cinematics.
Yes.
Do you think it's going to be, like, do you think that mode is going to be somewhere in the existing King's Road map, or do you think it'll be its own? Because you know how, like, Junkenstein's Revenge... That was its own individual thing.
I think it was a reskin of Eichenwald with like a new courtyard bit attached
to it. That's what I was thinking.
I think that's what it was.
Or
because it was just after Eichenwald. It was shortly after Eichenwald had come out. So it was like 2 months later.
Yeah. Do you think they'll do something like that then?
I think it will be a redone version of King's Row, which should be really exciting.
I did enjoy Junkenstein's Revenge. Anything that brings Overwatch closer to Nazi zombies. It's just like the marriage of my two favorite things in this world. So
this is these are extremist Omnix. So it's kind of close.
Yes.
There you go.
Let's do it.
But yeah, I think it's quite exciting.
Do you
play Overwatch? Because I realize we've just spoken for ages about it.
I'm sitting like I got nothing. But
sorry.
Basically, yeah, Overwatch. First person and third person shooters in Japan have never really been huge, but it's starting now to become a thing. And Overwatch was one of the games that did like quite well in Japan because it's obviously very accessible to anyone can play it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks cool, you know, it's got these great character design and stuff like that, which in Japan goes a really long way. So it's definitely been doing well. We cover it a fair bit on the site, but I personally just don't have the time to commit to it. It's one of those games that you just have to really, really put time into, I think.
Yeah.
If you want to not be left behind.
There is that. Like, I think I always like to think that there's enough there to sort of dip in and out of. But then I suppose we dip in and out in a way that like actually ends up being loads of time.
Yeah, is inhuman.
Because I'm like, oh, I only really play an hour now and then, but it's an hour every day, which really adds up after a while. So
I think, because I've had the experience now, having played it, of introducing some of my friends to it as well. And you kind of forget about that initial barrier when you're playing this game. So other FPSs, you know, it's like, okay, I get it. Like, I've got a gun, these other guys have guns, and we're all going to shoot each other until one of us dies. Where it's like Overwatch, not only do you have to kind of understand what your character can do and should do, but what every single individual character can do to you and how to avoid it.
Yeah.
And I think that at the start can put up a bit of a barrier. My sister, because it's things, it's weird things you don't even think about. So my sister got the game and she was saying she wasn't really enjoying it and she couldn't kill anyone. And I was like, well, what are you doing? And she was like, well, I was trying to snipe and I just, like, nobody was dying. And I was like, who are you playing as? It's like, Anna, the sniper. And I was like, oh, God. It's like, you're a healing sniper. Obviously, I sound like a nerd there. Yeah. I was like, I believe you're a healing sniper. But it's little things like that that I feel like, yeah, you probably have to sink a number of hours into it before you
can understand. It's like fighting games, you know, they're fun to dip in and out of, but if you want to play them properly, then you really have to commit.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Speaking of, it's a fantastic game, though. It's made with so much attention to detail, and the balancing is just insane.
Well, that's it. It's like, I, you know, the constant thing is like, oh, it's just a reskin of TF2 or whatever. To a certain extent, yes, obviously they've taken a huge amount from that. But you kind of look at it and you go, yeah, but the amount of work that's gone into making it a really good reskin of TF2 that works in the modern day, I don't think that's like a diss at all. Like, that seems like a good thing to me.
Yeah, I also like Team Fortress 2 is a great game.
Yeah.
And I feel like Valve should have advanced it further than they actually have done. Like, they still have the same classes and a lot of the same maps that they have for a very, very long time. And I know that's the way that they, like, Valve works.
Yeah.
It's like installing their games and just adding things on top of it. But Overwatch has taken it to a completely another level.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's so far from what Team Fortress 2 created that I view them as separate games completely.
You know, we were talking on the podcast not long ago about showing someone something you love and then them not appreciating it in the way you do and getting really frustrated by that. That's exactly
you're getting frustrated with Daniel.
You just reminded me with your sister. Like, I gave my brother Overwatch for Christmas and he's like an amazing FPS player. He was like, when he was like 12, he was number 14 in the world at SOCOM or something. Really weird. Like, he got really
SOCOM
good.
Had leaderboards?
It had crazy, big leaderboards. Lots of people played that. You needed one of those little PS2 modems to play it.
Yeah, I remember
him sitting
that.
In his room, like this little kid, just fucking dominating people at SOCOM. It was nuts. He's really always been great at shooters. And I was like, he'd love this game. So I gave it to him for Christmas, and he's been playing it recently. And I was chatting to him about it, and he was like, yeah, I really like it. I only really play Mystery Heroes, where it chooses the hero for you at the start of every game. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're playing the game, like, fundamentally wrong. The idea is that you have a hero you choose. And he's like, yeah, but if I did, I'd just choose, like, Soldier and just win every game, and, like, I'm not really interested in that. I was like, firstly, number one, you've got a main, and you don't want to use your main. And number two, you're an arrogant dickhead.
You're never going
to know. I was just saying, like, oh, this is rubbish. I wish I'd never told him at all. Right, April Fool's Day happened.
Yeah.
And somehow both of us missed the best thing that happened on April Fool's.
You found out that you were adopted.
Yes, absolutely. My dad called me
you
a fool
too?
And told me.
My God.
Oh, my God. We both missed the fact that Rick and Morty Season 3 came out, to the point where you sent me a message
about
it on April 2nd, said, did you see this happened? I said no, looked it up, found...
How did you... Wait a minute, because my entire Twitter timeline was... all taken up with
I have
that.
No idea.
I don't know. Like, I think I must be following the wrong people or something.
It's very odd. But like, you told me about it. I looked up, found a stream of it, and just I got your message on the toilet. 25 minutes later, still on the toilet, finishing up Rick and Morty. I was like, well, I'm not going to waste any time going in my bedroom to watch this. This is ridiculous. I'll just watch it on my phone.
I said, when you told that story, I was like, I bet your legs were asleep. But apparently you had like a shuffle game going.
Oh, yeah, so I was jiggling around.
Blood flow was
keeping everything rolling.
So.
You're making me sort of visualize more than I particularly want or need to.
It's a very Rick and Morty visual. It's a lot of sci-fi business going down there.
Like the ultimate April Fool's Day joke as well.
It's the reversal. It's a reverse April Fool's, isn't it?
How long have people been waiting for that third season? It's years now, right?
It's a year and a half since season two finished.
Only that? I thought it was
18 longer. Months, yeah.
Jeez.
I mean, that's still a long time in
TV world, TV land.
These days.
I watched it 2.5 times that day.
Yeah.
It was great. I thought it was incredible.
If you don't know what the story was, the best thing about it, they've trolled people already by saying season three is out and then releasing like a trailer that's just made up as a Rickroll made out of all the things from Rick and Morty and stuff. So everyone just believed that they were being trolled again. And the way they did it is really weird as well. They just had it on a loop, not rewindable all day.
Yeah.
So just sort of this weird like single episode TV channel that they set up for the day. Which is,
what if you came in like halfway through and then you...
Well, exactly.
Because we missed it, so we just watched like ripped copies of it. But yeah, what if you came in like right at the end and then it just spoils a bunch of stuff? Or, yeah. I have no idea.
I kind of expected it to be like some weird looping time travel narrative or something, because they always do stuff like that.
That could have been really interesting. And then I watched
it and was like, oh no, it's just a really good episode.
Really good episode.
Sounds like flying on an American airline, you know, where you can't pause any of the films. Yeah. It's just on a loop.
Awesome. I remember waking up when I was a kid going on holiday and waking up halfway through. Is it The Fugitive where it's Harrison Ford? No, it's not The Fugitive. What's the one where Harrison Ford's like trying to save an Amish woman? Or is that The Fugitive?
Wasn't that... Witness? No.
Witness, yeah. I just remember waking up halfway through Witness and just being like, it's Harrison Ford and loads of Amish people. Not knowing if that was like a comedy or a proper film. Just being like, oh my God. Not being able to concentrate on anything
else. Have I ever talked on this podcast about my... irrational fear of Pinocchio and donkeys?
No.
Because of that same experience.
Oh, okay.
I was on a flight over to America, and I think it was like a 9-hour flight. And one of the only movies that they had streaming that was for kids was Pinocchio. Mm. And at the time, I was really ill, like on the flight going over. And I just remember I watched Pinocchio once, and it was that scene, you know, where the boys turn into donkeys.
Yeah, the most terrifying scene in...
So that's already quite scary.
Disney history.
And I remember watching it once and being like, that was horrible. It's like, I just do not feel well at all. So I was basically went to sleep after that. But I fell asleep with the headphones in. And I was having these weird fever dreams. And for some reason, I kept like waking up, like half awake every time that donkey scene like came on. So it was just 9 hours of donkey nightmares.
The call of the donkey nightmares.
All the way to America and just getting on. And like to this day, the EO of a donkey just chills down. I just got chills there just like thinking about it.
Well, it's like at least if you're going to turn into like a wolf or something, that's cool, right?
Yeah.
That is cool. Donkeys aren't
turning
cool.
into a donkey.
It's really
Jesus, God.
And it's the way it happens because he doesn't know it's happening. It, you know, it's like
one ear comes up, right?
And ear, like, and then he gets, and then he starts freaking out, and he's like, "What's happening?"
And he can't speak anymore.
When he loses his voice,
it's worse than the bit where it's basically the same as the bit in The Matrix where Neo's mouth closes up against his will. Those two things are the same.
But only more horrible because it's a child.
Or Audition. Have you seen the movie Audition?
I have not seen.
Dude's being tortured by
a donkey?
By a donkey, and the donkey's sort of braying in his... No, it's... You haven't seen Audition? Audition is
a film that gave
me nightmares.
It's exactly the kind of film that I hear about and then decide to read the plot of on Wikipedia instead of watching, because that's a sanitized way of dealing with horror for me.
It's a film it's by Takashi Miike. It's a classic sort of Japanese horror movie, and it's about this guy who he works at a TV station, and his son wants him to remarry because his wife's dead or whatever, and so he tries to find a girl by sort of staging a fake audition for a TV show and then sort of stalking this girl, but she turns out to be like a killer, like a psycho.
This sounds really interesting. What's it called? The Audition?
Audition.
I'm gonna look it up.
I've heard about it being like one of the more disturbing movies.
Gets out there. Like I don't want to spoil the ending for you, but when you're talking about being unable to speak while unspeakable things are happening to you, that is a film that...
Superb. All right, there's your triple bill, Prince Charles Cinema, Pinocchio, The Matrix, and Audition. Let's go.
Well, don't start with Pinocchio, because that shit will just clear the place.
Yeah,
I'd be so scared.
That's number one horror.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it's the scariest film I've ever seen.
You just reminded me of... have you ever seen Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me?
Yeah,
where is this podcast going?
So there's that central to that is like a time travel narrative, but I'd never seen it. I still never seen it in full. I fell asleep really? Watching the DVD of it once, and
it's shagadelic, baby.
Well, exactly. He has to get his mojo back. I'm not sure where his mojo was. So I was watching. I fell asleep during it, and I woke up, and you know when you're sort of in that like dream haze where you're just like, I don't know where I am or what's going on. I was at my ex-girlfriend's in her spare room. We just weren't allowed to sleep in the same rooms because of our parents.
I thought that was like a weird, like you were living there.
I just
there.
Appeared yeah. in her spare room. What the fuck? And the DVD had done that weird thing that where the film ends and it started playing the special features.
Oh,
so okay. It was just playing deleted scenes and outtakes. But I was like half asleep and I didn't know I'd fallen asleep for that long. So I was like, wow, this time travel narrative's really out there. Like, everyone keeps like laughing into the camera and like, or like appearing in the wrong places. And I was just sitting there for like 5 minutes, just being like, what the fuck is this film? I can't believe this was successful. It's like more confusing than Primer.
The best things in life happen when you're halfway between dreaming and existing. Yeah. It's so great. What a magic
between point. Dreaming and existing. So when you're dreaming, you cease to exist.
Yeah. That is true.
Don't you, right?
Yeah. I've seen you have a little nap and just fade out like the Back to the Future photo.
I have to, like, when I wake up, like, my hands are still gone. I have to, like, shake it out. Yeah,
you can't hit the alarm clock. You're just phasing through it.
Fucker!
What's the weirdest thing you've ever done in your sleep? As long as it's not actual nightmarish stuff, like killed a, I don't know, cat.
I've never killed a cat in my sleep.
No. I said don't tell us that.
I don't think I've ever killed anyone in my sleep.
What? Come on.
Weirdest thing I've ever done in my sleep. I mean, I get dreams. So I've lived in Japan for 11 years. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I really miss, like, some British food, which I never thought would happen, but I really do. Mm. And sometimes I have dreams, like, stress dreams, where I'm in a Tesco or a Sainsbury's.
Oh, you were telling me about this the other day.
And, like, I'm suddenly there, and there's all the stuff I really want is all there in the supermarket, but my flight leaves in an hour, and I have to go.
Oh, my God.
And I can't buy anything.
That's deep.
That's horrible.
Wow.
It's really like nightmarish. Yeah.
Mine's way less complex than that. I just one time fell asleep with my arm behind my head, so that throughout the process of the night, it cut off all circulation to my hands.
Well, that was your hand ceasing to exist.
So,
it's all true.
So I woke up halfway through the night and then put my other arm back there and felt another human's hand on yes. my pillow. And I just grabbed it and started screaming. And like, I didn't realize I was just shaking my own hand.
Like Samuel Jackson's arm in Jurassic Park.
I was just like, and then of course it starts tingling and you realize this isn't another human.
That's amazing.
Samuel Jackson's not in Jurassic Park.
Samuel L. Jackson, yes, he is.
He is. In Jurassic
he says,
Park.
Hold on to your butts. He's the guy that runs all the computer systems.
He's always smoking a cigarette. And
when was the last time you saw Jurassic
God,
Park?
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I forgot all about that.
It's such a weirdly minor role. Like, he's got a couple of significant lines, but he doesn't really do much at
no.
all.
Yeah. And he's a direct result of, as we've talked about before, Muldoon being an idiot. Yeah. we've got to show you this YouTube video. Of Muldoon being an idiot. It's brilliant. It's one of the best things ever. We didn't make it. What was the other thing? Oh, yeah. Just the thing. When I woke up once, I was half asleep, and apparently I, in my dreams, walked over to the French doors in my mum and dad's living room because I was sleeping on the sofa and started trying to, like, wrench them open without unlocking them. And someone in the room was like, what are you doing? And I was like, the baby.
That's like, genuinely like, scary.
It's out there.
The baby.
The baby's out there. And that was it. And then I went back to bed.
Is that like the truth is out there, but sort of just the baby version?
Yeah, sort of very.
There's a reason
very
you're on a
child.
Desk by yourself.
Yeah.
It's not an accidental.
You fade out. I just mutter about the baby to myself.
The seat next to him is occupied by the baby. It's just it's still out there. It hasn't come.
It's
to...
just napping.
That's why Chris Tilly left, is because I kept shouting that he was sitting on the baby.
You kept trying to put a bib on him.
So that's Rick and Morty season 3, apparently.
It's great. If you watch the show, you should watch that episode.
We just only just got Rick and Morty in Japan because like Netflix has just started to become a thing. We had Hulu and then we got Netflix. And they started to like localize, like Black Mirror was one that we got with like Japanese subtitles. Oh, okay. So I was like, oh my God, I can actually recommend this show to people now. And because Black Mirror, if you don't understand good English, that is not an easy show to follow.
Imagine. Yeah, it must be tough.
But so Rick and Morty, it's been great. I've been sort of late to the party, but sort of catching up from the beginning.
It's funny because we were late, really late as well. We only started watching it when it was added to Netflix, which is like a year or two after the actual airing date.
I think it was about 6 months after the first series finished, someone recommended it, and I watched all of it at the time, the first series, and went, hey, I'm not really sure about this. I think I was just in a weird bit where I was like, oh, I'm not, it's all a bit sad. I don't want sad comedy. And then, like,
sad comedy.
Well, yeah.
It is kind of depressing.
There's just bits where you're just like, oh, this is horrible. I don't, like, the jelly bean in the Magic Kingdom.
That's one of
place,
the worst.
So awful. I was just sitting there like, oh, I need this in my life. And you started watching it. I was like, yeah, I'm not really sure. But apparently season two was really good. So I watched all of it again. I was like, this is one of the best comedies I've ever seen. It's, I love so sad comedy now.
Trying to sell it to people is always a difficult thing. You kind of just have to be like, look, take my word for it. It's incredible.
And it's one of those ones where you've got to sort of, I hate that recommendation, but you've got to watch like four episodes to really understand how smart it gets with its own in-jokes and stuff.
Yeah.
Like the amount of theories that have come out about things that happen in the background and things like that. Like there's one bit where he throws, in one TV show, I think it's Gravity Falls, some guy throws a load of stuff through a portal. And then in the background of a shot in Rick and Morty, all the stuff falls out through this portal. And you're like, what is going on? How are they dealing with all of this?
And one of the cool things that came out of the first episode airing is that they announced that season 3 will be coming out this summer, which is really exciting. Still a little ambiguous, but at least we have a time lockdown.
It's enough time to get like winter. McDonald's to get the Szechuan sauce back in.
Yes, Szechuan
sauce.
Which
is a weird in-depth joke.
Nine more seasons. That sweet McNugget sauce.
I really want to know which person in the Rick and Morty family. Have you? Because you've watched some of this episode, but not all of it.
Yeah,
have you hit the Szechuan sauce section?
Yes, yeah.
Someone in that show has incredibly fond memories of a niche dressing.
But you know, I get this in Japan all the time because you always get these like special limited edition chocolate bars and stuff like that and snacks.
Right.
And they're available for like, you know, a really short time. And so you just spend the whole time just trying to stock up on as much as possible. And you find one that you like, you know, because you know it's going to disappear.
Yeah.
Well, that's an amazing segue into our next section, which I have called Eating Crazy Japanese Food.
Ooh.
We've been told off for eating on this podcast before, but Dale's not on it, so.
And we're going to be very sensible about it because I hate the sounds of people eating on a podcast. So
like
the eating
it.
Will commence far away from mics where the audio was cut, and then the review will be done after eating has commenced.
Well, also, I mean, the sound of people eating on a podcast is generally disgusting, but most of the snacks I've brought from Japan are disgusting in their own right anyway. So, so thematically, it works.
You're going to hear away screaming.
I brought a few bits, I've brought some that are genuinely very nice and some that are genuinely maybe not so much.
I'm really excited.
But these are all things that people, you know, would normally pop into a convenience store and buy.
Okay.
Where should we start?
I wish I didn't drink all my water now. This was a mistake.
Maybe let's start with this very
Is that a
very
can of
standard.
Coke? It's just a can of Coke sitting on the floor.
What the hell?
There you go.
What has this been here for? Sweet, thank you, God.
I think that's Jeff Kaplan's.
Sweet.
So this is umeboshi. Umeboshi is pickled plums.
Oh,
okay.
Somewhat tart pickled plums.
I'm into.
Have a little sniff maybe before you. How does that?
Oh, good Lord!
I think I've maybe had this before. Oh no, I haven't.
So these are particularly tart ones, but you get all different varieties.
So they come in different levels of tartness.
They do, and you get some that are dried out. These ones are sort of still squishy.
Oh, they're very.
You can get drinks that have pickled plums mixed with shochu. You know,
it's
Japanese.
Oh God,
spirit.
Oh God,
that's interesting. Is there such a thing like an aftertaste? Is there an after smell? There's an after smell to this that I like.
There's nothing I like about this.
The initial hit is like pure vinegar almost. All right, are we going on this?
Yeah.
Let's try this out. Okay,
here we go.
It's much harder than I thought.
It's crunchy. So you both look a little bit uncertain. I thought these ones might go down quite well.
Oh, God. Oh.
Ah. Ah.
It feels like
the sweetness that you want is like teasing you and never actually comes. Like I thought halfway through, I might. Oh, it's really lingering.
Wow. Oh, holy shit.
It's got one side of my mouth. It like burst with vinegary juices.
I'm crying. I had to just swallow the whole thing whole. I couldn't even chew it all.
Ah.
Is this good radio?
Yes. Hearing Rory Retch is one of the funniest things I can imagine.
I'm really sorry, guys. I'll hold it together.
More.
Let's go with something a little bit more standard then. So this is...
You glad you found that Coke?
Oh my god.
What if you drank that Coke and it just tasted a bit? It's been there for so long it now
Please
tastes
tell me that's the
plums.
Worst one. Is that the worst
I
one?
I don't think
this
it's
gonna is, be. This is, I'll give a little shake here. This is a packet of khaki pee.
Okay.
Khaki pee, which is to a British person, is a slightly comical name for a snack.
A little bit.
And it's a mixture of khaki, which is like little...
pickled plums.
Little pickled plums.
No!
No, they're actually extremely delicious little rice crackers.
Okay.
Actually, not rice, bean crackers, I guess. And it's mixed with peanuts. That's where the peat comes from.
Oh, I'm into this.
Sounds pretty good.
And
some protein.
This is a standard otsumami, which means
really good.
Snack that you might have with a beer.
Oh, I haven't got any of the. I want a peanut.
Yeah, you got to make sure you get a good distribution of peanuts within there. Yeah.
Got mostly. All right.
So this is something that you would, you know, find in any convenience store.
Okay.
And sometimes when you go to a bar, they might put a little bowl of these out for you to pick on.
Got one on the floor. All right.
Oh, they're just really nice. They're smoky.
I'm worried about how noisy these are going to be. I'm going to eat over here.
They're going to be quite crunchy. Oh, it's some spice.
You can get different levels of. You can get some really, really spicy ones. Mm. This is more a standard level of just, you know, a little bit piquant, maybe.
This is perfect. I'm down with this. I'm just going to eat all of these all day.
I'm into that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're back.
I'm yelling because I'm eating far away from the mic.
Neither of you are vegetarian, are you?
No.
So first of all, well, maybe if you see the package here.
What is it, just a dead horse? Oh, it's fish.
He's a little
dead horse?
Tiny little desiccated fishies.
Not what's in there, is it?
You might appreciate the this sort of heavily pixelated font work.
Good lord.
On the packet that looks like they've sort of stretched it to the wrong resolution there.
This is a quality manufactured product.
Did you see the picture that went viral the other day of I think it was like a sushi restaurant that had a picture of their menu, but they got it so wrong that for one of their plates just uploaded a picture of sushi USB pens by accident.
<That's>
like
wicked.
A platter of like sushi USB pens. I thought that was incredible.
Okay.
They might have done it for a joke. I'm sure they couldn't have.
They didn't think anyone was going to tweet it out to the world.
That's fair.
So you should notice, by the way, how easy all of these packets are to open. In Japan, all packaging is easy to open. In Britain, you guys are savages here. I can't open any fucking thing at all here. Everything has a little cut in it that you can just open it just like that.
That is not a cultural comparison I was expecting to hear.
No. Wow, that we're savages.
That we're savages.
Can you get a little waft of that?
I don't want to.
Oh, so, yep.
Here we go.
See, I quite like sardines and stuff.
Oh,
those tiny little eyeless fish.
I'm not going to eat
would
the,
you
eyes.
Rather the eyes. Would you rather
I'm
the eyes were in there?
The eyes.
I don't know.
So these are whole fish. I don't know what kind of fish these are. They're tiny little guys.
This is disgusting.
This is a worry.
I've done a lot of bad things in my life, but I don't think I deserve this. I didn't realize that this was going to happen when I agreed to be on the podcast. Can I break it?
If you want.
In half?
Can I break
Is that,
it?
Yeah, just have a little nibble.
I'm going head first down my... Oh my god, it looks so strong.
It's not breaking.
You go to the gym every day.
Oh, it looks like it's kind of got like a jerky texture to it, which I'm into.
Mm. Okay, I'm going head first.
Oh, no, I'm not into it. No, I'm not into it.
What happened there?
Did you get any of it?
I got a whiff. Sniff.
I got I'm a going whiff. For it, I'm there.
Oh, it's so hard to eat. Oh, it's like a twig. Oh.
This is very entertaining for me. I wish we were
taking
a video that I could show everybody back at the team in Tokyo.
You're more than welcome to video also. I like the taste.
Who would put this in their body?
This is, I should say, this is very, very, very popular snack. Mm. Yeah. My wife loves things like this.
I think I could get used to it over time.
I actually really like the flavor. Like, it's
No. It's a dry sardine base, like flavor, basically. It's just the fact that it's like biting through a tree. It's really strange. I didn't expect a fish to be so unyielding.
I can't believe you ate its head.
Hey, all of it.
Again, I think it probably helps if you have a beer to wash these down with. But
yeah.
That's definitely like a salty thing that would go nicely with a beer.
My favorite so far is the peanuts and
the kakipi.
Yeah, the kakipi.
What, the thing you've had before, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have like a cheeseburger down there or something? That'd be great as well.
Here's one you might at least recognize the brand name here.
Okay. Are those the green tea
These are
wasabi.
These are wasabi flavored Kit Kats.
Oh, no. I hate wasabi.
So do you really? I mean, I'm going to have it.
Me too.
Well, so basically in Japan, we have all kinds of different flavor Kit Kats.
The strawberry ones are unbelievable.
Depending on the region of Japan, you get certain flavor Kit Kats that you can only get in certain regions, so that when you go on holiday there, you can pick up a little gift or whatever. And we also have a Kit Kat specialty shop in Tokyo.
Like the M&M store, but better.
Probably. I haven't been to the M&M store, but they sell
M&M
like gourmet Kit Kats that are like these incredible like creations, you know.
Wow.
Steak on the inside.
These are not those. I think these are local to maybe Sapporo. I can't remember.
Okay. So these should we just open one and have a stick each?
So I should say also, I mean, Kit Kats. If you like Kit Kats and if you like wasabi, these are absolutely delicious. So,
are you one of those people?
I am.
All right. I'm quite worried about this.
So what?
It smells quite nice.
It's a sort of wasabi color, isn't it?
It's got the wasabi color. It smells just like white chocolate.
Yeah.
I'm really worried about this. Also, my hands stink of fish now, so I'm getting a sort of wasabi fish white chocolate.
All right,
let's
go for it.
Let's see. They're both looking fairly. You both look not too outraged.
This is actually quite nice.
Mm, really nice.
Yeah, it's not. I thought it was gonna be way stronger on the wasabi side. It's much more Kit Kat.
Oh, it's just got like a hint at the end. That's really delicious.
Very good. Well done,
Kit Kat.
That's my favorite so far, actually.
Yeah, I'm into that.
I've seen they make like green tea ones as well. I'd love to try one of those.
Actually, they have several different varieties of green tea ones because in Japan, there are so many types of tea.
Mm.
And you can get all kinds of different Kit Kat, tea Kit Kats.
That was great.
That's
almost better than a regular Kit Kat.
I thought you were going to say, that's almost better than a tiny little fish.
Tree.
A weird twig of a fish.
Have we got time to do more?
Let's keep going.
All right. I've just got a couple more.
Dale
here.
Can cut it out.
So this one is called Geso. This is, I'll tell you what. There's a little window in the packet. So maybe you can see what these are. What do you think?
These look like things that you collect in Zelda after you've killed an animal.
After you've killed a sort of sea-based.
Are these bokoblin animals? Guts?
Yeah. These are squid tentacles.
Okay, I can get down with that. Dried.
That have been jerkied, I guess.
Why don't we start with the plum? The plum really threw me for a loop.
Are you all right? You're clutching your stomach.
I'm okay.
I'm ready for this.
Oh, and they've got lemon sauce on them. Lemon-flavoured
squid. They smell like tentacles. Dog treats.
What did you say this was?
Squid tentacle jerky.
Squid tentacle.
Oh, there's his suckers.
You can see all the little tiny. These are tiny little little things, mate. But you can see the suckers on there.
Well, they do actually smell like dog treats.
Yeah, they do a bit.
I'm worried about this. All right.
They really do. It smells like pet food. Like a pet shop.
You get this from pets at home.
We do actually have like gourmet pet food shops where you can get like little dog biscuits that are shaped like actual cookies and cakes and stuff like that.
I love it.
I want to hasten to add, I wasn't doing that out of like a, ooh, you eat dog food type stuff. It just does smell that way. That's my only point of comparison.
I'm just waiting for the next one where it's like, so the next one is a toy that you just chew.
Yeah, it's just a tennis
ball. It looks like a newspaper. It's not a newspaper.
Okay.
All right, let's give this a shot. Oh, it's very hard.
It's actually quite nice. It's just sort of lemony and fishy.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Here comes the fish.
There's the dog food flavor.
Rory's face is like screwed up completely. I think really it's so bad.
It's very tough.
It's just I can't. It feels like I'm raiding the bins at dog food. Yeah, pets at home.
Would it help if I assured you that you're definitely not? I mean, these are...
Yeah.
These are definitely legit. I didn't. Wait, let me just check the sell by date.
The first taste is nice, and the second taste is, or the aftertaste is nice, but there's a middle section where I definitely feel like that's not made for me.
That is a food that would survive a nuclear apocalypse. Like, it would be unharmed.
Well, I mean, the tentacles and the fish would come back to life. That's what would happen in a nuclear apocalypse.
We are overlords.
Now, Daniel's opening a box that's coloured yellow and black, which is nature's colours for danger.
Well, yeah, so I don't trust what's about to happen. So the yellow and black. So first of all, I'll explain what this is. This is okonomiyaki, which is a Japanese, like a sort of a pancake made from cabbage and egg and then whatever like ingredients you want in there, like
I can get down with that.
And you cook it on a hot plate, and it's really super delicious.
Oh, okay.
Turned into
this one is it?
Turned into
shit
crackers, right? Senbei crackers. And I bought these when I was in Osaka visiting Universal Studios Japan to go check out their Monster Hunter attraction.
I'm so jealous.
And so the reason this is yellow and black is that the local baseball team, the Hanshin Tigers, that's their uniform color. And so
fair play.
You find a lot of like snacks and products in Osaka that are yellow and black.
Right.
So don't worry, it's not a warning. The warning is that I bought a pack of these for our team as well back in the Tokyo office to try, and everybody hated them. So.
Super.
All right.
That's where the warning comes in. I think there's...
And those guys like the tree fish and the plums.
So there's two different flavors. There's mayonnaise flavor, one with sort of mayonnaise topping on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that is just sort of a cabbage flavored one.
I'll take mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise. Let's try both. Okay.
Mayonnaise is my favorite condiment. So
here's mayonnaise.
Hopefully this is something you go by.
And this one is cabbage.
Okay.
Cool.
And they're all individually wrapped in little
They
yellow
feel and very black thin. I wasn't expecting it to be quite so thin.
Ooh. Basically like a cracker.
Yeah.
Like a mini dry pizza.
It's quite sure. Strong smelling.
So okonomiyaki usually comes topped with little fish, bonito fish flakes.
Okay.
Called katsuoboshi.
I think we're all right for now.
And that's on those crackers.
Oh,
that's what the fishy smell is.
I think my RDA for fish is maxed out right now.
the mayonnaise one also has prawn on it.
That sounds quite good.
Soba kasu, which is like... bits of the batter from it's bits of the stuff that comes off when they're making soba that they turn into like a sort of a batter.
Okay.
Topping.
Alright.
Cabbage
ready.
One has onion, cabbage, prawn, stuff like that.
I think I got a prawn there. I thought it was a chili, but that's a prawn. Alright, I'm moving away for a crunch. I'm just gonna go the whole big deal.
Whole day?
Yeah.
What's the verdict on these then?
It's basically just quite nice.
That's like...
It's a bit like the texture I would imagine chipboard is like if you watered it a bit. But the flavours...
Salt water.
What do you think?
It was okay.
What was your mayonnaise kick?
Not enough to eat the whole cracker.
No?
But I did go for a second bite. So if eating the whole cracker is 100%, this little pie chart, as you can see, I left about 25.
Okay.
So that's a 75% enjoyment level.
Okay.
I would not have another one.
No.
But even still, that's not the worst one.
Again, I can't tell whether it's the accumulated number of fishy things I've had. There's a lot of fish going on in my mouth right now.
You have gills on your neck right now.
Do I?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Just generally having all this stuff now mounted up on the table and all opened up, there is a sort of an aroma, isn't there?
Yeah,
it's very Zora's Domain-y up in here.
It's a very interesting mix of things. Like, this is the weirdest sort of midnight feast.
I've never really given much thought about what Zora's Domain must smell like.
But reeks.
Yeah. Oh, there's no way that place doesn't stink.
Oh, horrible.
Like... What's the worst smelling place in Breath
Zora's
of the
Domain,
Wild?
Man.
You reckon?
I reckon, yeah.
The
Goron one is just going to be like hot and burny.
I'm
okay with that. Yeah.
That's not good. That smells of eggs.
Eggs is better than fish.
Really?
I don't
rotten
like fish.
Eggs?
I don't like fish. Says the boy who just ate a fish head.
You didn't eat the fish head. I can see the head right there.
Shh, they don't know.
You ate a middle. You ate its guts.
This is why we stopped the video podcast, so I didn't have to get blamed for not eating fish heads.
This has been enlightening in a way that I wasn't expecting.
Is that all of them?
That's all. Yeah, I mean, I
look at you.
I'll bring more next time.
So, Joe, what are we saying is the worst one?
The worst one, I think it is actually the plum.
Yeah, the plum.
The plum really hit me in a way that I wasn't expecting. Like, because also because I expected it to be much nicer. I think it ruined me by expectation. I was like, this is going to be fine. It smells a bit weird. And then it was powerful. The tree fish, I quite like flavor-wise, but it was difficult to bite them, which seems wrong. I don't like a fish disrespecting me that way. That's basically my issue with it.
Come on, land Jesus. Your turf and try and tell you what to do. The kakapi, is that it right? Kakapi?
Yeah. Kakipi.
Kakipi.
That was nice.
That was the best one, right?
No, wasabi Kit Kat's the best.
Wasabi Kit Kat was incredible.
Yeah. No, that's really good. And again, it's the opposite of the plums. I was expecting to really dislike that, so it worked out for me.
Thank you so much.
Daniel, that was amazing.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Incidentally, what's your favorite of all of these things?
Of all of these ones that are on the table?
Yeah.
The plums. I mean...
Love them.
I like those, yeah. And kaki peas really... it's just such a standard snack. You get it everywhere.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
they're very yummy. And I love the wasabi Kit Kats as well.
They're definitely. So good. Oh, man. Thank you so much. That was wicked.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Feedback.
Let's do it.
And that's
now that we've had
that's
enough
not
feeding.
A term for Rory's vomit.
That's for the offset.
Oh, I think Daniel, you were going.
Oh, right. Again. Okay. Cool. Okay. So feedback is you guys' questions. Thanks very much for sending these in. I have here, hey guys. Which sounds like I'm about to start a YouTube video.
Hey guys, Daniel here from Japan.
Let's get started.
Let's eat some fish heads.
Avid IGN UK podcast listener and two-time Prepare to Try live attendee, Chris Elliott became a father this week.
Oh.
Can you get a hearty congrats from the IGN UK team?
Chris Elliott.
Should we do that first?
Well bloody done.
Congratulations.
On liking Prepare to Try and also being a father for the first time.
And congrats from the IGN Japan team too.
Yeah.
Yay.
Double.
Hey.
Smash.
Double congrats. And do you guys, probably just Alex, have any advice for a pop culture loving dad? Alex isn't here, by the way, so sorry. What should be the first TV show / movie the kid watches, first game, book, etc.?
You've outed yourself as a dad.
And this is from Ned Newbury in London. I'm a dad.
Yes.
I am a dad indeed, so I can... I are there any other dads in here? No, right?
Absolutely
just me.
Not.
Okay, I'll take point on that one then. Well, I guess, first of all, what would you imagine would be the first like movie or
like a nerdy
game
type thing
show to a kid?
I would go, what would you like for a kind of to get them indoctrinated?
I think Star Wars is a great one. It's a safe one. It's one that
there's a lot of killing in Star
Wars. It's quite there's a lot of death even in
this
the
early
one.
This is something that when you have a kid that you start to reappraise all these things. Mm. It's like there's a lot of guns in Star Wars, and Mario just keeps jumping on these poor little creatures that weren't even approaching him, you know.
All of a sudden, your kid's stomping on turtles in the zoo. Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Totally.
Maybe it's a bit too complex, but like Wall-E strikes me as a very wholesome and fun thing. But maybe just the start? Like the opening silence section, I think a kid's not going to be super interested in hearing loads of talking. It's just sort of funny things happening with a robot. Then the second bit's a bit sort of zooming around trying to save a space station full of
fat
people.
I got a good one.
Go on.
All right, you ready? Wreck-It Ralph.
Wreck-It Ralph.
Because,
sure?
Well, one, I love Wreck-It Ralph.
You like all of Wreck-It Ralph?
I love that movie.
The whole Sugar Rush section is some of the worst.
That's funny.
That's
terrible. There's some good jokes. But that's a good one because it's a fun movie. They'll enjoy it on a lot of levels. But also, I think then if they like have a connection with it as a young child and growing up, then they'll be like, oh my gosh, I know that from Wreck-It Ralph. Mm. It's like Space Invaders. That's the little noise that it made when he picked up the exclamation point. You know, that's like kind of a link.
What's
to
you're
the
saying,
universe.
Wreck-It Ralph should become the first point of knowledge.
Well, it's kind of like it's kind of like when I was growing up, I watched a lot of The Simpsons, like a ton of The Simpsons.
So all your references are actually references.
I would then later in life watch the movies, and I'm like, that's from The Simpsons. It's like, obviously, I'm just referencing the references. Yeah. And that's going to happen, I think, more and more as we grow up. But I think that's a good one to get kids into.
I think you're both completely wrong.
Okay.
No, I think
feed him plums.
If the kid, if this kid's just been born, right?
And that's true. I mean,
so we're talking about the first things to watch. In our house, it was the first TV show my kid gone into was Noddy. Noddy and Thomas the Tank Engine. They are super, super gentle. And Noddy, she just, because Noddy like falls over and gets in trouble a lot, and my kid just pissed herself laughing. The misfortunes of poor little Noddy.
But isn't the point of this that it's something that a pop culture loving dad can get into alongside their kid? Did you enjoy the travails of Noddy?
No, I didn't.
Did you like Ringo Starr's voice in Thomas the Tank Engine?
No, because he doesn't do it anymore. But okay, so in that case, the other thing my kid really loved from a very, 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 very tiny, tiny, tiny age was Pikachu. Out of Pokemon.
Yeah.
Because Pikachu, right, kids can really, they can only see black and white when they're born, and then the first colors that come in are like yellow and red. Pikachu is black and yellow with little red cheeks. So that, for one thing, she can see it.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I had no idea.
She had this little Pikachu teddy that I got from the Pokemon Center in Tokyo. Because he has like little ears, right, little horns.
Yeah.
It's easy to carry. It's easy to kind of grab onto for little hands, you know.
Mm.
And then from that, she's kind of gone into, she hasn't played the Pokemon games, but the anime and stuff like that. So that might be one.
That's actually a great one. Great idea.
I like the science behind it as well. Does that mean that your kid saw Pikachu in color before you?
What? Oh, yeah, at a younger age than me, you mean? Because she wasn't born when the first Pokemon came
that's,
out.
Yes. Interesting.
Well, Pokemon was, I mean, was it in color?
It wasn't actually.
The screen was green, so does that count as color? It's a color.
A color.
Yeah, no, I guess so. Yeah. I guess somehow that probably makes sense.
Strange tangent.
That's a good one. I agree with that one.
Pikachu's good.
And for games, I mean, my kid likes watching me play games.
Yeah.
A game controller is a little bit sort of big and unwieldy for her, though she's starting to get there now. She's been playing on my Switch a bit and playing, she can sort of manage to make Link walk around a bit in Zelda and not just off cliffs and into walls like she used to when she was a little kid with like Mario 3D and stuff. But she plays a hell of a lot of like iPad type games, like My Little Pony things, where it's like, oh dad, I really need this DLC because like I need three more ponies or I can't even do this mission, and it's like £12.
Yeah. Oh my god.
But when she plays like real games, she likes Octodad. She likes watching me play Octodad. She likes Super Mario 3D World, she liked a lot. Splatoon's a real good one. And then for her to actually play herself, I've been trying to get her to play Pac-Man. Because it's the controls
of the original survival horror.
It's a concept.
It is.
Chased by ghosts.
I guess
in a maze. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Good. Good work.
Yeah. And her first movie that she saw in the cinema, we took her to see Paddington, which
that
film was actually really good.
Yeah.
And you could see there's a lot of like British like TV comedy writers were involved with it, like Will Smith, who did the not that Will Smith,
but the Will Smith who did The Thick of It.
Exactly.
Veep he did as well. Yeah,
that's right. And so there's a lot of like quite good jokes in it and stuff. Yeah,
that's really cool. Well, there you go. Chris Elliott through Ned Newbery. That's a really nice thing to do, Ned. Well done on being nice to your friends.
My bit of feedback comes from Ryan Ensler. He says, I'm reading the intro because it's very relevant. Hello, you salty Brits. More relevant than ever as our table's littered with fish heads.
I just realized I'd pushed my hands through my hair and now my hair's just going to smell like the sea.
Over the past few
briny
weeks,
Brits.
I have really been enjoying your segment on bad movie theater experiences. So my story was when I went to see Arrival with my friend and his girlfriend. We were sitting in the front row with an extremely loud couple flanking us, using military talk. We were a team comp of three, the nerd, the jock, with an extremely loud couple flanking us to our back left, a row back. They were talking at a normal to loud speaking volume and laughing at various parts of the movie. About halfway through the film, I did as many other people would in that situation and yelled, "Shut the fuck up!" They quieted down for about 5 minutes and resumed being a buzzkill to the entire theater.
What I like about that section is that Ryan doesn't really make a huge case for them being that bad. Like, they shouldn't be talking throughout a movie, obviously. But there's something about him going, yeah, they were sort of talking at a normal level. So I scream, shut the fuck up at them.
Wow. It's like, they're talking at a normal level.
It's loud enough to be annoying.
Obviously.
Right?
It's like, shouldn't be talking at all.
And they were laughing in various parts of the movie.
To be fair, there's not many jokes in Arrival. Shouldn't be laughing.
Oh, yeah, actually. I forgot that it was Arrival.
Jeremy
Renner
is quite
I tried to watch Arrival on the plane over here, but they had hard-coded subs, and it was including, like, the descriptive subs.
Oh,
like,
right.
A baby cries right at the beginning of that movie, and it says, baby crying, and I just thought, I ain't watching this. I need to watch this in a better way.
You should watch that film, though. It's mad good.
About 10 minutes towards the end of the film, I got fed up and tossed my empty candy box towards them, knowing the trajectory would completely miss them, but still get their attention. Nope. The box hit the girl straight on the shoulder. The couple were noticeably jolted out of their own private asshole world.
Yeah, wait, who's the asshole here?
Exactly.
Who's assaulting who?
I think Ryan is... I think Gav would appreciate Ryan's verbal and physical attack. I think there's maybe a more... I don't know.
I think we are in a gray zone. Like, this is very much... I don't know, this is like Russian literature.
As soon as the credits began to roll, the boyfriend ran up behind us and began to confront my friend. He proceeded to grab my freshly filled, girthy, diabetes-inducing American soda from my armrest and dumped it all over my head. I could tell after that exchange that the guy was rather thuggish and would most likely confront me in the parking lot. People around us gave awkward stares, and a couple even agreed that the guy overreacted and was a chode.
I like the idea of Ryan turning around being like, I guess a chode, right? And they're like, yeah, total chode.
I decided to get out of there before security tried to rope me into something worse. I was smart enough
to... Rope him into something worse. Kid, you got the tossing skills we need. Could you throw stuff at people all day?
I was smart enough to change from my hoodie into a leather jacket so I was unrecognizable and ninja'd my ass back to my car.
Unrecognizable? You got a different jacket on.
Luckily, the guy didn't find me, but I'd like to thank Hitman and Assassin's Creed for giving me some decent chops to get out of a public area unnoticed.
Ryan, right. You should be in prison.
There's a lot to unpack here, isn't there? I don't miss living in Britain. I tell you, you know.
He's from...
The idea of anyone having a fight at the cinema in Tokyo is just... unthinkable. No one would even rate, like, talk in a movie, let alone fight each other.
God, I have to move.
Need some of that. Because, well, this is... this is from an entirely different European country.
Oh, are we not going to give our own cinema altercation?
Oh, well, we can. If you've got, one. This has become, like, a weird long-running thing where Gav...
Oh, I see.
Gav's very aggressive about maintaining order in cinema. In an extremely Gav-like way.
Yeah.
And so
sometimes he doesn't have a ticket. He just goes to watch over everyone.
He's just like an informal usher.
Shit, Batman.
But yeah, it's become... Basically, we don't really get feedback anymore. We just get bad cinema stories. So I'm going to read out another one.
Okay.
This one's from, and I'm going to mispronounce this, Hakon Lyngstad. Hi guys, wanted to chip in with the story of the ever-going collection of strange tales from the cinema. I don't usually go watch films on my own, but none of my friends wanted to watch Whiplash, and I really did. So back when it first premiered here in Norway, a couple of years back, I decided to make an exception to my rule. Now, when I go to watch a movie, I usually take a box of After Eights.
That's weird already. Yep. Maybe that's a cultural thing that we don't know.
I can see how it might seem to lie on the stranger side of the cinema snack spectrum, but it's my favourite chocolate, and a whole box is way too much for a feature film, so it usually lasts me the whole weekend. Even though there were only five people who'd
got... They do sell small packs of After Eights, don't they?
Clearly not in Norway. Even though there were only five people who'd gotten tickets to this particular showing of Whiplash, this one guy had ordered the seat next to me. Irritating, but I did the only right thing and bottled my frustration up inside. Even with this moron next to me, I went on to enjoy the film, nibbling on my beloved After Eights throughout. However, as the film was reaching its climax, I discovered the box of chocolates was filled with nothing but empty black sleeves. I put them back like a sane human being. What?
Wait,
you
what?
Put the sleeves back in?
Wait, what's happening?
He eats the After Eight, so you know they come in the little sleeves.
Yeah.
And he puts the sleeves back in the box.
Well, that's fair enough. I think I've done that. I don't want to make a mess on the floor.
I would never do that.
I would just.
What are you doing? Just toss them around?
No, I'd put them on the floor, but then I'd pick them up at the end.
You'd put them on the floor.
I'd pick them up.
Monster.
Yeah, but some of them might sort of waft away.
What if they fall out? What if someone shuffles their feet?
They would be quite crinkly. You shouldn't be eating after eights anyway, because they are crinkly. That's what I'm saying.
What? They're after eights don't make any noise. Well, the packet, you mean? The packet.
The sleeves, as you're taking them out, you're going to be crinkling away.
Yeah, those Mission Impossible maneuvers just like absolutely remove.
Given that Håkon Lyngstad always eats a box of after eights in the cinema, I think he's got those moves. Anyway, we've gotten off track by everyone else being wrong. Frankly, I felt a bit ashamed as I bought one of the larger boxes, and I definitely thought that would last me at least half a week.
Oh no, I think I know what's going to happen.
Even without the after eights, I was impressed by the final jazz performance in Whiplash, grinning as the credits started rolling. As the lights turned on and I grabbed my coat, however, I made a revelatory discovery.
Oh no.
Littered around the seat next to me were a couple dozen after eight sleeves. The bastard next to me had turned out to be a devious mint chocolate thief. He was already on his way out the door, and I was far too much of a coward to go after him and ask what the fuck the deal was, although I felt like J.K. Simmons. If only I had some of that intimidating Welsh gusto. I've never been back to the cinema on my own since, and I'm always keeping an eye out for my snacks. Stay safe out there.
But
all the best, Håkon Lyngstad.
One thing I would say, though, is that if the packet is too big for you to finish anyway, it's nice to share, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's not sharing. that's like saying that if you get burgled because you left your window open, you shared your TV with the burglar.
That's very weird.
That's mad, isn't it? Do you think that person just thought it was like a really cool Norwegian tradition that there would be a box of after eights on
the communal after eights at this cinema?
Yeah,
I'll come here
on
again.
The armrest. Every armrest has a box of after eights.
I've been saying it for years. That's why when you get popcorn at the cinema, you always put a hole in the bottom for your penis to put into the box, so that if anyone tries to grab your popcorn, then they know.
But that's
stands up in court.
I don't understand.
They grabbed it. I did not put it in their hands.
I don't know how that's going to stop people, because they'll still eat the top of the popcorn, unless. How big are you?
Just a dick. Just sprouting words. Like, don't even think about it.
Oh dear. Salty or sweet.
Salty or sweet indeed. Buttered, my friend. Buttered.
Cool. That's a good way to end the podcast.
Well, the strange. Oh, sorry. I did think of a strange cinema experience, which was this was a couple months ago. We did a thing with the new Resident Evil movie, the final one.
I saw that.
Oh, the live stream, right?
Yeah, we did a special live stream in Japan. We had a bunch of Japanese celebs come on and sort of play this special Resident Evil movie game that Sony had made and whatever. It was quite fun. But anyway, as part of that, they had the movie premiere in Tokyo, mm-hmm. and so I went along to the premiere. I'd already seen the film by this point, so it was my second time going along. And you know, sometimes in cinemas they have like the sort of the fancy seat area, right?
Yeah, like the VIP
bit. So this was the movie premiere, and my seat was right there in front of that VIP bit, mm-hmm. and Mila Jovovich was sitting literally behind my back.
Nice.
Right? And she spent the whole movie like laughing really loud at all the jokes and heckling the screen, and when somebody did like a really good kill, she was like, oh yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
I would lose my mind.
Fantastic.
So you enjoyed that experience?
Well,
I suppose it's your second time, so you're not losing out on anything.
I'd already seen the film, but I'm, you know, just it was just how she was so into it. She was enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you can't really turn around and tell her to shut up either. I'm trying to watch you.
Do you mind?
Did you see those tweets from the Ghost in the Shell premiere in Japan where this guy was like, I'm at the premiere of Ghost in the Shell. This guy won't stop playing on his new games console. And it was Shigeru Miyamoto in the row behind him.
Really?
And then he was like, and there's this other guy who just, I can't remember what.
Was he playing a Vita?
Yeah. He made another joke. I can't remember exactly what the joke was, so I've ruined it.
Virtual boy in the cinema.
But basically, it turns out that two rows behind that, Hideo Kojima was in there as well.
Oh my gosh.
It's like all these guys just turning up to
imagine that screening. Oh my God.
Be the best.
Just absolutely die.
But that was the IGN UK podcast. You can email your own feedback, which, let's face it, is probably cinema stories, to IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. Mm-hmm. Also, actually, if you want to send questions about what it was like meeting Jeff Kaplan, or predicting what you think the Hero Facts will be, I would actually be very interested in knowing what those are. Daniel, where can people find you?
Where can people find me? I'm on Twitter at No More Daniels.
No More Daniels.
Yeah, it's
we have enough already.
It's a No We're More done. Heroes. jp.ign.com, of course, if you want to read the site in Japanese.
Look at the pretty pictures.
But we do make, you know, lots of videos that are fun to watch. Yeah. We do our own podcast too, which is called Shabedi Sugi Gamer, which means gamers who talk too much.
That's awesome.
It's all in Japanese, but you're more than welcome to. Actually, it's been really nice to just sit here and talk at length in English. That's been so nice.
Excellent. I'm glad we could accommodate and also, I don't know, slightly rudely react to the food you brought very kindly. that's been the podcast.
I'm gonna when I get back to my desk, I'm gonna try the reverse, which was I found this morning a can of cucumber and mint drink.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so you guys do it too.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah, fair enough.
We are morons.
Fair enough.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll be back next week probably if we can be bothered.
See you later. Bye bye.
Cheers.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.